And we ought to talk a little bit about how those few families prospered.
So literally what you saw was a family that sat down and said at the beginning of the century, 2000, you know, something's wrong and I need to reposition. You think of it this way. There's a world that's dying or it's being killed, whichever you want to say. And then there's a world that's being born. And so we have to get our minds, we have to get our bodies, and we have to get our money out of the world that's dying and into the world that's being born. And we have to do it in a way where we don't get harvested. And ideally, we do it in a way where what we're doing is both wealth building and decentralizing, not just for ourselves, but for everyone. Because if we all act in a way which is wealth building for everyone, then there will be wealth for everyone. If we all act in a way which is destructive of wealth, then there's not going to be any wealth for anybody.
Just parenthetically, when you talk about a world that is dying, you're not just referring to the people that are being harvested, but you're also referring to the system that's harvesting them, right? Is that part of the world that's dying?
No, because the world that's harvesting them is getting richer and richer and richer.
Right.
It's doing quite well. The world that's being harvested is dying, and part of the reason it's dying is if you look at the new technology, there's much about the industrial economy that needs to change. And so, you know, we've had significant employment in a variety of different areas where we don't need significant employment, whether it's because we're moving the jobs to Mexico or robots are doing the jobs now. So we absolutely have a world that's dying, you know, and that's happening. And part of the reason it's happening is the people who just stole $40 trillion succeeded. We've had a financial coup d'etat. They've succeeded. And what's remarkable is they've succeeded in a way where most of us supported them. So, you know, not only have they succeeded in stealing $40 trillion, but they've won the crowd in the process. The crowd supports them and respects them. It is what it is. So, and that's why I say collapse is a myth, because the collapse myth says, oh, these people are struggling and there's no money and, you know, they're going to collapse.
Right.
They're broke. No, they just stole $40 trillion. They've won. They've had a financial coup d'etat. They're not broke at all. They have a huge endowment, enough to finance global armies and global governments, you know, from the interest and dividends. And you know, they've pulled off an incredible coup d'etat, and they've engineered popular consent. We just finished voting for the politician who helped them engineer the final blow with $27 trillion of bailouts. And now we're just voting for him like he's the solution to protect us from Mitt Romney, you know. So they've pulled off an incredible planetary financial coup d'etat, and they're stronger than ever. And they're not going to collapse. We might collapse, because if you steal $40 trillion from a society, you know, it could collapse. But it's not collapsing because it's collapsing the same way a host collapses when a tapeworm destroys its health. So the tapeworm's thriving. And the host is dying. And the question is, okay, what's next?
What's next, and what is the world that's being born?
Right. So let's go back to the individual, because I saw and worked with families who literally said, this is happening, and we are going to change. We are going to withdraw from the tapeworm, and we are going to reposition to protect ourselves from being harvested. And they understood the risk of debasement, and they understood the risk of the slow burn, and they engineered their assets. So when the real estate market was high, they got their assets out of the real estate market where it was practical and feasible to do so. And they shifted out of a high-cost lifestyle or area into a home base that had much lower overhead and much more resilient and self-sufficient. And they invested a significant amount of money into providing for enormously natural food and health. Because one of the most important things, you know, if you don't have your mind and body, you have nothing. You know, and he who loses his mind and body will lose his money. His money will follow along afterwards. So they took the time. The first thing they did was they said, okay, this is about my time. So I always tell people, don't do a money budget, do a time budget. Where are you investing your time, and how much of that time are you giving to things, to enterprises, to media, to people who are not authentic and do not wish you well? So step number one, turn off your TV. just turn it off, because that saves you 2 to 7 hours a day right there. And that gives you the time, you know, if you can get just from, you know, not buying lottery tickets and not watching TV and not spending money on hard narcotics. Those are three. Americans spend $140 billion a year on the lottery. That's enough money to rebuild the economy right there. You know, you add what we're spending on hard narcotics, those two, we have enough to rebuild the whole economy without Washington, without Wall Street, just with our own resources. Okay. And, you know, it's not them pissing it away. It's us pissing it away. Okay. So turn off your TV, because that will give you time with which to take care of these other things. Okay. So first thing, get the corporate media, get the subliminal programming, get the entrainment out of your mind. Just shut them off. And people say, well, I need to know what the news is. Well, first of all, that's not the news. That's not information. There are lots of alternative sources that are useful, but better you not even watch anything than you take in that kind of programming. So that's number one. So protect your time, and then take the time to make sure that you get good food and you do whatever you can to build up your health and your immune system. And it's very simple. You build up your immune system, you reduce your toxicity, because chemtrails are being sprayed on your head. And if you don't reduce your toxicity is just going to keep going up, up, up. And with that level of toxicity, you can't think clearly, you can't act clearly, you can't do anything. So we're in a very different environmentally polluting environment than we were 20 years ago, and that means you need to invest significant time in food health and making sure you're healthy. Okay, so let's say you've saved the time by getting rid of the corporate media and TV. You've invested the time and money you need in building up your health. Then let's start through your money. You need to lower your debt and overhead wherever you can, because the slow burn is about steadily taking up, you know, lowering your purchase power and steadily taking up the cost of essential goods and services. So anything you can do to lower your overhead and to lower your debt is great. And to build a home base that is resilient, where they can't, you know, ratchet up your expenses. So, for example, I moved to a place. I have three properties in Hickory Valley. My combined property taxes are $500. So let's say they triple them. It's $1,500. It won't break me, okay? But I purposely did that. You know, I see people not living in mansions who have property taxes of $15,000, $25,000 a year. What happens to them if they double it? So you want to organize your lifestyle and your home base. I have an audio seminar called Positioning Your Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times that we did in 2008. And we show that if you change your lifestyle in a variety of ways, your income may go down, but your expenses will go so far down that your savings rate will go up. Okay, so you do everything you can to reorganize your home base down to not just a lower overhead, but doing more things for yourself. So in this environment, it becomes much more economic to learn how to do things for yourself, or to have people you know and trust do things, as opposed to pay some large corporation to be involved. So I always tell the story of a wonderful friend who was always complaining about her water bill going up, 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 and the yields on her portfolio going down, down, down. I said, this is really simple. Sell your stock, build a well. You know, don't let yourself be intermediated by the big corporations. Just get out. You know, get out of that stock and get into a well. Okay, skills and business. If you look at how the economy is shifting, there are businesses that are growing and there are businesses that are dying. And it's unbelievably important to constantly be learning and building skills in the things that are being born. You know, so if you look at the skill set we needed 20 or 30 years ago, it's totally different than what we need now. And it is absolutely critical that each one of us, and each person is different and their industry is different, each one of us is learning in the direction of the way the economy is going. And one of the things I do on the Solaria Report is I try and talk a lot about where the economy is going so people will know how to get from here to there. Okay, finally, your assets. If you go through your balance sheet, you know, whether it's tangibles like precious metals, whether it's equities, whether it's fixed income, you know, there's a whole bunch of ways to invest in the world that's dying. There's a whole bunch of ways to invest in the world that's being born. And for me, precious metals is a bridge between the two. you want to get your assets out of the world that's dying and into the world that's being born. And that's a much more complex conversation. But, you know, each one of us, the only person who can govern your savings and your assets is you. So you have a responsibility to yourself and to the people that you help take care of to make sure that wherever your money is, it's in that world that's being born and the part of it you want to be a part of. You know, there's nothing that's more disturbing than to listen to somebody rant and rave and go march against the military-industrial complex, and then you look at their portfolio. Well, why march against it if you're financing it? And the funny thing is, everybody, you don't need a financial expert to figure out where your money's going and what is it nurturing. You can figure that out, you know. Finally, who are your allies? And this gets back to, who do you admire? Who do you associate with? Who do you want to be with? Are you connecting with authentic people who really have your best interest at heart? Or are you supporting? I can't believe the amount of money and time that was dedicated to a presidential campaign that had no real bearing on your life and wasn't authentic, while we all ignored the local elections and the real leadership that will make even a life and death interest to ourselves. If we had taken all that time and money and spent it on just getting the food safety rules so that the small farmers could survive, it would have been a much better investment of our time and money. So who our allies are and the allies that we invest in. I'm stunned again and again when I see people support their university, give money to their university, when those endowments are managing portfolios and policies that are running around the world doing the worst evil. You know, the worst evil that I've ever seen, you know, I saw as an engineered policy by a university endowment. And yet everybody's bragging about going to school there or, you know, giving money to it. Or, well, wait a minute, who do you think they are? You know, so why are you supporting? So if you go down, you know, all your donations, all your volunteerism, what are the institutions you're supporting? What are the institutions that are responsible for you? I mean, look at how many beneficiaries CalPERS has. I had the president of CalPERS tell me in the spring of 1997 that, quote unquote, they were moving all the money out of the country. Well, if the president of CalPERS knew that they were moving all the money out of the country, then he also knew that everybody's income was going to fall. Well, why was he buying mortgages? Why was he buying mortgage-backed securities? That is a complete violation of your fiduciary obligation. That is a complete violation of the law. Okay? Now, why is it that all the beneficiaries of CalPERS who have CalPERS manage their money, why are they not asking questions about that? Why aren't they not holding them accountable? Okay, again, so, you know, we now live in a world where 50% more of our savings are managed by institutional investors. Are we going to hold them accountable or not? So that's the issue of allies. And finally, donations. You know, the American people are unbelievably generous. We give a ton of money. If you look at who we give money to, we give money to large not-for-profits who play all sorts of dirty games in their endowment, and we let people in our family starve to death.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Or we let people on the street who are our neighbors starve to death. So for God's sakes, you know, one thing it's very easy to do is decentralize your donations like that. Boom. So, you know, get it out of the large not-for-profits and get it into something that is intimate. You know, there are millions of people all over this country who are struggling and having problems. Just give them a buck. You know, I don't pass a guy on the street who really needs money that I don't, you know, I'll lay 10 or 20 bucks on him because, you know something, there's no overhead. It's direct. And then finally, where do we bank? Because we need three things to continue to have a vibrant economy. We need small farms. We need small businesses. We need small community banks or credit unions. And the only way they're going to survive is if we choose them as a customer. And so there is nothing more important. You know, Charles Gibbons, who started Acres, wrote a fabulous book. I think it's called Unforgiven, where he said the GNP is a function of, it's a multiple of small farming income. And he makes a very good argument. And I would say, you know, if you translated it out, it's a function of small farm income and small community bank income and small business income. And those three things need each other. You know, they're an ecosystem. if you go into the county of any country, so we've talked about the individual and what the individual can do. And I just want to say before we finish that part, if each one of us would do those things that we could do that was energizing for us to do, Bonnie, it would be amazing. It would be amazing because trillions of dollars would shift out of the tapeworm and into authentic businesses and authentic people. It would be amazing. And, you know, each one of us just coming clean with our own money, one by one by one, and doing it in a way that's energizing for us. Because remember, the number one problem is we're being harvested. So doing it in a way that stops and protects us from being harvested, it would shift trillions of dollars, and it would force those institutions to change. Because I've sat in the board of directors, or I've sat at the top of a government agency, and you say, well, you know, the customer won't support us doing the right thing. They're in a prisoner's dilemma, too. The more the crowd shifts and acts, the more the people who would like to on those boards of directors can argue for the responsible thing. But they need us to demonstrate that we will shift. And the more we demonstrate, oh, you know, Chase Manhattan Bank can do Enron, they can do the Mexican bailout, they can do all these crazy things, they can do the derivatives, they can do the bailout, they can do all the mortgage fraud, they can do the servicing fraud, and we'll still bank with them. That's a clear message that says, you share $25 a year of the fraud profits with me, and I'll play ball. And basically, the message back to them is that they are free to engage in massive fraud against us and our government as long as we get a $25 a year kickback. And the message to them is that we don't know how to price our value. You know, not only are we corrupt, but we're stupid because we think $25 is enough, which is crazy. You know, as a pricing matter, it's selling ourselves cheap. So part of it is just when you look at a household and then a community level, as you look around your county, what you'll find if you go into every county in America, and I've traveled tremendously over the last 10 years trying to understand this, what you will see, so let's take it down to a small county. You have maybe 20 to 50 families that make that county go. And what are these families? They're people who've worked hard for generations. They're honest. They're hardworking. They're competent. They're caring. The biggest investment we have in every county in America is education. We educate our children. They spend decades raising and educating their kids. And now the kids go to the army, they go to prison for drug dealing, or they go to Wall Street to the big corporation and never come back. And so they're building businesses, 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 but the next generations are disappearing. They're not there on Main Street to take over and keep the business going. And so the equity of those businesses is getting drained out. The equity on the real estate is getting drained out. And if you look at how their money works, they're putting money in their 401ks and their IRAs, and that money is going to finance the big box stores coming in and taking over their market share. So they're financing their own demise, okay? And they're financing their own demise by sending their kids to work for their competitor and then sending their money to finance hiring their kids to come in and take away their market share. So it's a very, very destructive model. And yet what you see is those families and those enterprises continue to make it. It's amazing because they're so hardworking and so productive. And they're literally holding that whole society together. I call them the people on the line. You know, they're taking care of their kids. They're taking care of their parents. They're taking care of their grandparents. They're taking care of the neighbor who got in trouble. They're taking care of everybody. They work hard. They save. You know, they're literally holding that whole area together. They are the law in a funny kind of way. Now, if you look at all solutions, the most important thing in any county is what gives them relief today? What lifts them up? What makes them stronger? What helps their businesses? You know, forget all these grand solutions. What is it we can do today for those small businesses or those small farms or those small banks that will help make them more productive and add more value in that place? And you know what the answer is? Stop doing all the things that are harming them. Because they're literally like plants that are being denied water and are being pissed on. I mean, literally. And so you have all these different forces that is trying to destroy them, whether it's the government or it's the large corporate sort of infrastructure or the global GATT kind of changing. So you've got a variety of hostile forces in the game of economic warfare trying to destroy them. Well, number one, protect them from it. And number two, you know, do everything you can to back those forces up and stop them. So it's very simple in small farms. I'll give you an example in Tennessee. All the small dairies were shut down by food rules. They weren't shut down by the market. They weren't shut down by technology. They were shut down by government rules in the great game of economic warfare. Okay, that's number one. And so it shut down hundreds and hundreds of farms all across the state, you know, that were totally economic. Change the food safety rules. Last year, our big Christmas donation was to the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. You know, that is a legal entity that is making sure that farmers have the right to sell to, you know, all these rules are being changed so a farmer can't just sell to a customer. It has to go up through the big agribusiness.
That happened with the dairies as well, didn't it?
Yeah, no, the dairies have been slaughtered all over the country. And you know, this is done in the name of food safety. It makes the food system much more dangerous. I mean, the food system has no nutrition. You know, it's no longer food. So the food safety rules have been used to do tremendous consolidation into corporate control of the food supply in a way that has tremendously deteriorated the quality of the food supply. Another thing that happened in Tennessee, as in many places, you're required to process, slaughter different kind of livestock in certain kind of facilities, but those facilities have gotten fewer and fewer and fewer. You're literally seeing farmers have to truck, you know, livestock into another state, get them slaughtered, truck them back. You know, it's insane. It makes the whole thing totally economic, and again, it's part of the centralization. If you change the rules that would allow farmers to do a small amount of slaughtering, so for chickens, it's very appropriate. To give you an example, there's one farmer in Tennessee who spent a tremendous amount of time up with the legislator, educating them on raw milk, got the laws changed to permit a cow share, or where somebody can own a portion of a cow. So cow share programs, got the laws changed so a small amount of chickens could be processed and slaughtered locally. Now, those are tiny little change of rules that makes it possible for lots of small farms to continue to be economically viable. If we had all spent all the time we wasted on the presidential campaign making those kinds of changes that protected the small farmers or protected the small community banks, it would have made an enormous difference.
It was so sad in Sonoma County to see generations of dairy farms, the farmers crying, having to sell their cows.
Right.
It was horrible.
It was horrible. It's really funny. When I was at HUD, when I was a financial advisor, the head of the multifamily insurance office said, okay, it's a wonderful, very gifted woman, said, okay, I want you to tell me the absolute truth. What can we do to really help communities be successful? And I said, what you can do is shut down and leave. Just leave. Because then you would stop harming them. All they need is for you to stop harming them. So the reality is, when you sit down and say, oh, I want to come up with a solution, we need to do this and we need to do that. No, we don't need to do anything. What we need to do is stop the things that are being done right now that hurt small banks, that hurt small farms, that hurt small business. And that's what we need to do. Now, the reason nobody wants to do that is most of those things are being done by the people, you know, if you peel back the onion layer, those are being done at the request of the people who have the power to kill with impunity, and nobody wants to pick a fight with them. The reality, though, is if you're doing 1,000 things to destroy small business, small farms, and small banks, and you say, I'm not going to deal with that, but I'm going to come up with this solution for more things that the honest people need to do, you're just adding the burden. You're just creating a new burden for the honest guys who are right now are struggling. If you go into any community and you sit down and you say, okay, let's get the nicest, most honest banker in that community. Let's get the honest, nicest small farmer in that community. Let's get the honest, nicest small businessman in that community. You know what the message is to that person? The message to that person is, you know, we admire the guys with guns. We don't admire you. And we don't support you. We really don't. We support the guys who are the winners. They're the winners. You know, they drive around in Porsches. They have a lot of money. We support them.